Morning. Thank you for the invitation and opportunity to talk about new chemistries and insecticides. It's been a rather exciting era for the insect toxicologist over the last 10 or 15 years. There are many new classes of insecticides. You see some of them here in talks, but I'm trying to put today all of them together, talk about what the new chemistries are that are either out there now or coming very soon. I think all these will be on the market now, at least in some parts of the world. They have different modes of action too, most of them, and that's important too when we talk about resistance development or resistance prevention. If there are more classes to rotate and not use one kind of pyrethroid over and over and over. So there are advantages to new chemistry, obviously, like that, and then there are some downsides as well. So insecticides are really important for a lot of reasons there. We all know them. Old chemistry, by my definition today anyway, would be DDT, although it's still used in some places. It's inexpensive, it works, with exception of some places where resistance is serious. Chlorinated hydrocarbons, the dieldrin, aldrin, chlordane, heptachlor class. Endosulfan is still widely used. In fact, it's used pretty widely in the U.S. Lindane a little bit, a lot of organophosphates, carbamates, and synthetic pyrethroids. These are kind of the standards on the shelf these days. And then there's this list of quite viable and not complete by any means alternatives, new chemistry. So I'll go through these and show you what they are and how they work and maybe a little bit of advantage or disadvantage to each one. Neonicotinoids are not that brand new. They act like nicotine, but they're chemically fairly different from nicotine. They do act at the site in an excitatory way. They bind and they act in the nervous system at the acetylcholine receptor, which is here on the postsynaptic part of the nerve. So when the nerve signal comes down this axon, it releases acetylcholine into the synapse, and the acetylcholine then triggers the next nerve to fire, and you get an electrical signal down it. Well, if you have neonicotinoids, they bind here also, and they will overstimulate, because there's acetylcholine and neonicotinoids, or nicotine does the same thing in our system, and it makes it too excited. There are several different ones on the market. This is just a different structural variation called thiamethoxam, and these are very potent at systemic insecticides, and that makes them really new and unique because we haven't had good systemics for a long time. OPs, there are a few. Carbamates, there are a few, but they're typically very hazardous ones to use. So in this case, these are not as hazardous to handle or use, and they do have a good insecticidal activity, not just by systemic in plants, but that's one of their modes. Fipronil is one that's a relatively new one. It works just like dieldrin, aldrin, and chlordane, and all those, but it's structurally not very similar at first. Although you look, and there are two chlorines, and there's three fluorines here, and three fluorines here, it ends up being a pretty persistent molecule. It's not dieldrin, though, or DDT. It's not that persistent, but it is a fairly persistent and a very potent insecticide. And it acts at the GABA receptor in the nerve, and as I said, acts like lindane and the cyclodienes. So if the nerve, the part that conducts the electrical signal down, the nerve impulse, it has excitatory ions, sodium, mostly the excitatory, potassium also. But it also has to have chlorine in here, the chloride ions, to keep it balanced, to keep it calm enough that we get excitatory and we get inhibitory or slowing sedative effects. This one, the chloride is important to keep it balanced and not overexcited. Well, fipronil blocks the cell from getting new chloride, and there you have, as a result, not enough chloride in here, and the excitatory ions, the positive ones, sodium in particular, make too excitable. The nerve is overstimulated, and overexcitation causes symptoms and death. Same way, this is like Dieldrin and Aldrin. For chlorpheniprine is a new one, only one on the market now, I think, of this class. Much like fipronil, is just one material, as far as I'm aware of, in this country, at least. This one's also brominated, chlorinated, fluorinated, and fairly persistent. Its mode of action is not particularly selective at all. Oxidative phosphorylation is the way all of us function in making ATP, making the energy using oxygen and proton that's passed through the electron transport system. Pentachlorophenol works by this mechanism, and some others. Very, I'd say, non-selective in general. But it is new chemistry, and it is on the market. So it uncouples the making of the ATP here. Spinosads are a group that are totally natural, made by an actinomycete, a bacterial-type organism, and a natural product. Very complicated structure there. They've made a few derivatives. Nature makes a few derivatives here, different substitutions on the R groups. And now Dow Agro makes a few alternative ones. It was discovered when they were searching for new microbes that would make new chemicals. And it's fermented. It acts at that acetylcholine receptor like the nicotine does and the neonicotinoids, but it doesn't mimic the acetylcholine. It makes the receptor more sensitive, and then that triggers some kind of the nerve impulse. So when acetylcholine is released, it encounters a very highly sensitized receptor on this second next neuron. So it takes fewer acetylcholines to trigger the next signal. Once again, the net effect is overstimulation. Avermectins have been around for quite a while. They were used in the veterinary and animal pest management for a long time as a worming agent, anthelminthics. Turns out they're pretty good on insects too, and they're used on insect pests of cattle and of pets, and so it's not only for worming. The glutamate receptor is also one that allows chloride into the nerve, like GABA does. So this one stimulates chloride, and that's a different one, and I didn't show a figure, but it does the opposite of fipronil, and it allows too much chloride into the nerve, and you get sedative effect, and it'll kill the insect. So that one works the opposite way of fipronil. Insect growth regulators, I just picked one or two because there are obviously many juvenile hormone mimics and so forth that are new out there. The ecdysteroids are new. They mimic ecdysone, the molting hormone. These are relatively new in the last, I suppose, 6 or 8 years on the market commercially. And they trigger molting, just like ecdysone does. And if an insect developing gets this dose, it will molt too soon, and then it'll molt again too soon, and this whole life cycle is interfered with, so they don't develop correctly. Bupropion is a single member of the class. It's kind of an unusual one. It inhibits chitin synthesis and deposition. These are not brand new as a class. This structure is new, but the old dimolin and some of the, well, and novaflumeron and others are used that inhibit chitin synthesis. Thiourea's, this one is one, diphenthiouron is a metabolic inhibitor. It stops the use of the ATP. When we make ATP or when the insects make it, if it inhibits the enzyme ATPase, they can't use the energy that they make. Both of those are really minor so far. The oxidiazines, this undoxacarb is a DuPont chemical that's fairly complicated, has a totally new mode of action. It is chlorinated here and fluorinated here, so it has some residual activity. It blocks the sodium channel. The sodium channel is what allows those excitatory ions into the nerve to make the electric potential, the nerve impulse, travel down the axon. So if you can't get sodium allowed quickly into the nerve, you don't get a nerve potential firing and moving. In this schematic, the endoxicarb just blocks the excitation step in propagating a nerve potential. DDT and pyrethroids, just by the way, do the opposite thing. They block this open, prop it open essentially, so that it keeps leaking sodium ions in and you get overexcitable neurons there. So some of the sites of action here are the same as these old ones, but a lot of them are new mechanisms there. There's one interesting feeding inhibitor. This one's pimetrazine. Syngenta makes this, and it arrests the feeding of aphids and leafhoppers and whiteflies. Sucking insects stop feeding when this compound is there. And it somehow paralyzes the subarial pump or the muscles involved, or maybe something else we don't understand how it stops them feeding, but it is quite effective and not related to any of the other insecticides at all. So it's a new tool in the tool bag. Semicarbazones are a new class. This one is the one that's most, it's a BASF class. Metaflumazone is, again, fairly persistent. You can see it's biodegradable, carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen. This part's all biodegradable. And then you've got fluorines on each end that are not very biodegradable. So it's not as persistent as DDT or Dieldrin, old school. Maybe as persistent as some of the more chlorinated synthetic pyrethroids, but it does have some residual activity. It also blocks the sodium channel, similar to indoxacarb that DuPont has, but this is a different class of the insecticides. And you end up with no nervous system impulses. The tetronic acids are a class that Bayer Crop Science has developed, and they're unique. Spiromesophen is one of them. This is a spiro arrangement, very unusual chemistry, where one carbon is the sole carbon in two different rings meeting just at this one point. And these interrupt lipid synthesis. And these are the first insecticides that are out there that affect lipids in insects trying to live and develop and grow, especially effective on some of the soft-bodied and sucking insects, bite flies and leaf hoppers, and but into mites as well, if I remember. And these are systemic, so that's another class, another option if you want to move a chemical in the water phase of a plant and move it. It has to be somewhat water soluble, and all these oxygens in this part make it reasonably polar so it can move. And the last one I want to look at is the anthranilic diamides. These are, this one is one that DuPont has developed, and they have various analogs of it, as you can see. But this is a derivative, not a derivative, an analog of ryanodine. Ryanodine was very old chemistry, 100 years ago, before there were DDT and organophosphates and carbamates. There was natural pyrethrum, there was lead arsenate, there was nicotine, there was cyanide, and there were rotenone and ryanodine type natural insecticides. And ryanodine was finally just figured out in the last 15 years how it works, and out of a plant originally, and they've made synthetic versions of it. But their new one is called Rynaxypyr, and it releases calcium, which then will trigger the acetylcholine or could be octopamine, other excitatory neurohormones to be released, or the transmitters to stimulate the next nerve. So it acts at a whole different site in the nervous system to trigger calcium being released within the cell of a nervous cell. Now, these are exciting from the toxicological standpoint and academics, and I teach this course, and so it's exciting to see all these possibilities. There are a lot of other factors that affect how quickly these get used in the developing world. Obviously, or maybe not obviously, the first big consideration is the economics. Do they compete successfully with, DDT, endosulfan, organophosphates, carbamates, synthetic pyrethroids? And the pyrethroids initially were claimed to be way expensive, but low quantities have made them much more relatively affordable. And I think in more time and development, these will be economically competitive, but almost all of them are much more expensive right now. Of course, when the patents run out on them, that allows other people to make them and do it generically, just like the pharmaceuticals. If they're generic, they're quite a bit cheaper. So it may be a little time until patents run out, but some of them, like fipronil, I think are almost gone or will be soon. And so there are some that will be moving fairly quickly into the developing world, I think. Safety of the products, always a concern. There are, in general, I'd say this class, this group that I just went through, all of them are probably safer than the OPs and the carbamates, but there are a couple in there that are not so highly safe. How do you get them distributed from sources of synthesis? Well, that's a question. Transportation is always an issue, an expensive one. What are the environmental issues? Well, there are some in those, and some of them are residual, maybe a little too residual. That occurs as a question. Regulatory issues, and I'll talk just a few things about that. Regulatory status in this country is based on restricted versus non-restricted use. We use signal words to classify them into caution or warning or the most seriously toxic kind of labels that say danger and poison. So there are, some of these are in each class there, and each one has to be considered initially. But the tox effects mean that, that we need to consider those non-targets, including our livestock and our fish, environmental residues, residues in food and feed. So in conclusion, there are many new classes, in my opinion, that are very feasible and would be useful to help prevent resistance or counter resistance where it's developed to pyrethroids or to thiodan, endosulfan. Some of the modes of action are not very selective, that are common ones, and some others are very highly selective. Availability is changing toward the newer classes. At least in this country, it's moving quickly that way. And some are suggestive, I say, of older halogenated hydrocarbons. Others are quite natural or nearly natural or designed off of natural products. So thank you for your attention. I'll take questions.